morning, everyone, and welcome to the May 28th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have a busy day here at the City Council today, and we look forward to your participation. Just a few ground rules for those of you who maybe haven't spoken before. We have some people signed up at the beginning of the council for council communications, and we have a proclamation and a welcome to a delegation visiting here from Japan. So those will be our first items of business, and then we'll get to the regular calendar. If you're here to speak on the regular calendar's items, please come up and state your name. We typically give people 3 minutes to speak. You don't have to give your address and phone number, just your name. If you're a lobbyist representing an organization, please disclose that and let us know who you are representing. Please testify only to the matter at hand. If we're on a given item, please testify about that item and not some other. So that everybody feels welcome, we have a tradition here of if you agree with someone and want to support their comments, raise your hand. And if you don't, either keep silent or give us a thumbs down. But we ask that you not make verbal demonstrations during the council meeting so that everyone has a chance to speak. Disruptive behavior is not tolerated, and you'll be asked to leave. If you have any handouts, please give them to our clerk, and she'll distribute them. So thank you all for joining us, and welcome. First, we have a proclamation to read, and I'm going to read that first and then welcome a delegation that's here visiting from Japan. I think we have Jane Gigler and Valerie Elke from Multnomah County here. Please come up, and as you do, I'll read the proclamation, which says, whereas on February 15th, 1864, what is now Multnomah County Library was incorporated under the name of Library Association of Portland, beginning a local love affair with literature, reading, and libraries that has lasted for 150 years. Whereas on June 1, 1864, the first library opened in Portland on the second floor of Benjamin Stark's building at 66 First Street as a subscription library. Whereas on March 10, 1902, the Library Association of Portland became a tax-supported free public library and extended services to all residents of Multnomah County in 1903. And whereas on November 6, 2012, the voters approved the formation of a library district to provide dedicated and stable library funding. Whereas in fiscal year 2013, Central Library and 15 neighborhood libraries in Portland circulated 9 million items, filled 2.2 million holds, answered nearly 500,000 reference questions, and held 11,000 programs for people of all ages. And whereas Multnomah County Library supports early learning, education, workforce and economic development, livability, and a healthy democratic society, and whereas Multnomah County Library provides targeted and proven services for youth, families, seniors, immigrant communities, and those with the fewest resources, and whereas Multnomah County Library service is based on three immutable pillars, free access for all, a trusted guide for learning, and the leading advocate for reading. And whereas as needs within our diverse community shift and evolve over the next 150 years and beyond, our library will remain adaptive and dedicated to the City of Portland and its people. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 1st, 2014, to be Multnomah County Library Sesquicentennial Day in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this day. So congratulations, and let's hear it for our library. Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Jane Gigler, a member of the Friends of the Library Board. The Friends of the Library help our libraries thrive through advocacy and fundraising. We're presenting this proclamation before you in honor of the 150th anniversary of the founding of what is now Multnomah County Library. As we celebrate this important milestone for the library, we also recognize Portland as a community in which reading, learning, and curiosity are also cause for celebration. Thank you very much for helping us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Commissioners, I'm Bailey Elke, Director of Libraries. Nice to see you all this morning. This Sunday, as you indicated, Mayor Hales, will mark a significant anniversary. On June 1, 1864, when Abraham Lincoln was President of the United States, the first library in the City of Portland opened not far from where we sit today. Since that time, our community and our libraries have evolved and changed together. Today, 16 of 19 libraries serve Portlanders with free and equal access to information, entertainment, assistance, and resources to improve lives. What hasn't changed over 150 years is the way in which Portland and the surrounding communities are enamored of reading and books. Even 150 years ago, it was evident that something big was happening in what was then an isolated outpost with muddy streets and wooden sidewalks. In the April 15, 1864 Oregonian, it was noted, quote, "The building is one of the finest Portland can boast of, and when the rooms of the society are fitted up and furnished, they will compare favorably with kindred associations in much larger cities than ours." So on behalf of Multnomah County Library, I thank you all today for celebrating this community asset. My hope is that libraries will enrich and expand the lives of Portland's residents for the next 150 or more years. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Well, could we do a photo with the council and you, please, to celebrate this? Thanks very much. 150 years. That's pretty impressive. There's not much around here that's older than 150 years in terms of public institutions, so that's quite a run, and I love the sense of the next 150 and that you're already thinking about that. So next, before we get to communications, I want to welcome a couple of guests here who are under the wing of First Stop Portland, of course. They're both from Tsukuba City, Japan. First, we have Tatsuo Igarashi, who is a former city council member, and Yuki Shimizu, who is involved in city government and in the business community there. Just wanted to welcome you and give you a chance to say hello. I know you've been studying Portland, but and put you on the spot here this morning in calling you up. But Mr. Igarashi was telling me about a project that he has led in Tsukuba City involving disabled people and getting them involved in the local economy. And if you could take a minute and tell the council about that, because frankly we have nothing like that here, and I love what you're doing. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hales and Commissioners, for sparing your precious time during the session. I'm from Tsukuba, as you introduced. Tsukuba is located northeast of Tokyo, about 60 kilometers. And we are known as the science city, or science center of Japan. We have about 300 national and private research institutes in Japan. Thanks to that, we are a very international city as well, and about more than 130 countries people are coming to Tsukuba and living there. So I had served as a city councilor for 8 years, and Portland is a city always I wanted to visit. And yeah, we've only here for only 3 days, but still, I'm feeling that I'm falling in love with the city. And this is, I heard that stereotype of the visitors. All the visitors just fall in love with the city. And this is just an honor to introduce my project to you, because I run a farm, organic farm, in Tsukuba City, where the challenged people work. So there's not working opportunities for the challenged people in Japan, and there's no working people in agriculture. So I was trying to connect these two issues into one solution. And so we are now, you know, selling the boxes, vegetable boxes, to nationally. And the most learning about Portland is just, as Mayor Hale said before, it's all about culture. It's not like system and not like, yes, of course, but it's not about all about system or institution. It's all about culture and people that Portland makes so different from other U.S. cities. So I really appreciate this great opportunity, and Mr. Shimi is kindly supported my visit. So he has just he wants to say thanks as well. So
okay. Welcome, Mr. Shimizu. Welcome.
My name is Yuki Shimizu. I run a real estate company agency. I'm a supporter of Mr. Igarashi. From today, I'm a supporter of Cherry Hills.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for being here. So how many disabled people are employed at the farm?
We have 70 now. And we are expanding.
And they sell the produce locally and nationally?
Locally and nationally, both. Yeah. Because we have so many supporters.
Yeah, we have some great nonprofits here, like Goodwill, where disabled people are employed, but it's mostly in products and services,
right,
not necessarily in agriculture. I think it's a really interesting model.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Please, yeah.
To our honored guests, we have a commission-style form of government, the last of any city our size in the country. How is your local government structured at the city level?
We have mayor, of course. And we have city councilors, but it's rather big ones. So we have 28 city councilors, but actually, it's like rubber stamping politics in city council. So basically, mayor decides everything. So and it's probably a bit different. You know, you have this commission system, but mayor has the strongest power in the local government in city level in Japan. So,
and sir, how big is the city? How many? What's your population?
We have 220,000 people.
So each city councilor represents.
We have one district. So
at large,
yeah.
Huh?
All at large.
Interesting. There's so many different structures for how cities are governed. Yeah, but so the issues of sustainability and local economy and equity are so common around the world. We all make these structures work one way or another.
So I'll be mayor in 2 years' time, so I hope one day, I can work with you to make a world a better place. Thank you very much.
Well, we wish you well in doing just that, and to your leadership and to both of you for being great emissaries to Portland, and we look forward to returning the visit. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your time here. Thank you. Okay. Well, we appreciate being able to start with both of those great moments. And now we'll get to some folks who've signed up for communications. Let's start with 485, please, Sue.
485, request of Lene Berg to address council regarding clean and safe programs.
And you're bringing some of the others who've signed up as well.
Read the others also?
Yes, please, go ahead.
486, request of Doreen Binder to address council regarding transition project street outreach team funded through Clean and Safe. Request of Ed Blackburn to address council regarding Central City Concern partnership with Portland Business Alliance around the Clean and Safe program.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners Fish, Novick, and Salzman. My name is Lene Berg, and I'm Executive Director of Downtown Clean and Safe. I'm pleased to be here today with some of our key partners in our joint efforts to provide treatment, housing, and jobs for many members of the community who suffer from addiction and poverty. One of these efforts you'll hear more about is our new panhandling outreach initiative with Transition Projects, which has been successful in moving chronic panhandlers off the street and into housing. Since its inception, Clean and Safe has included a homeless-to-work component in our mission. Our partnership with Central City Concern has enabled many individuals to move from the street into housing and living wage employment. Each and every month, our cleaners remove an average of 2,000 graffiti tags, pick up over 2,300 bags of garbage, and respond to over 300 biohazard cleanups. Without the dedicated work of our cleaners, downtown Portland would look very different. Our security work is done in partnership with social service agencies, the city, residents, and businesses. Portland Rescue Mission could not be here today, but they sent you a letter describing their positive experience with clean and safe security, and I would like to read a short excerpt. For the past 4 years, Clean and Safe has joined Portland Rescue Mission in our work to provide compassionate care to people in need. Every week, Monday through Saturday, Clean and Safe representatives help to wake up individuals sleeping on the streets and in doorways, clean sidewalks, and assist with our security of any lines that queue outside our Burnside shelter during meal service. In particular, Clean and Safe officer Jim Baer has provided exceptional service to the community. Officer Baer initiates conversations and builds relationships with people living on the streets of Portland, learning their names and backgrounds. Moreover, Officer Baer uses his relationships to work through conflict before it escalates, promoting a positive environment. Officer Baer is one of many Clean and Safe employees whose commitment and consistent presence has truly been an asset in creating a more vibrant community. Portland Rescue Mission holds great confidence in Clean and Safe and their work throughout the community. This type of security service is emblematic of the respectful way we ensure that public spaces are accessible and clean for all in downtown. We have people from all over the world who come to see how we manage our enhanced service district. Visitors from Japan, Oklahoma, and our neighbors to the north in Seattle have met with us in the past few months to learn about the strengths of our partnerships, innovative programming, and collaboration. One of the unique aspects of our program is the partnership with the Portland Police Bureau, where we support the funding of 4 Portland bike officers. Over the past 2 years, we have had many conversations with you regarding some of the negative behaviors that occur in public spaces downtown. These behaviors are not attributable to a single group, but are often exhibited by individuals who are service-resistant chronic offenders. My board and I are very supportive of the efforts of Central Precinct Commander Bob Day and his team. Increased visibility of officers on foot patrol provides increased opportunities for interactions with citizens to help make downtown safer and more welcoming. I want to thank you for your support of our many programs and those of our key community partners. The members who pay into the Enhanced Service District care deeply about this city and provide the additional resources to make this one of the best downtowns in the nation.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. Mayor Hales and Commissioners, it's a pleasure to be here. I want to tell you how happy Transition Projects is to have been part of this innovative program with Lene has been wonderful, and our relationship with the Clean and Safe and Portland Business Alliance. Between businesses and social services, it's been at times rocky over the years, but I think the three of us sitting here together represents the changes that have been made over the years and how well we've worked together, not only Ed and I in social services, but with the businesses. And it's incredibly important. And it was one of the questions that I, when people were running in the last mayoral election, and I believe I asked you, the only question I had is how would you, and I think I asked most of you, how would you work to get social services and business working more hand-in-hand together? Because it's the only way we'll move forward. And I think that what you have before you is an example of well, it can work. So we had this program that Lene came to us and asked if how we would work with people on the streets who are panhandlers. Could we get them off the streets? Could they get into housing? And what we did was to take on this challenge. But what we did it in a more unique way. And we were able to, I think we had talked about getting maybe 7 people, engaged with 7 people, but not necessarily off the street, and we were able to get almost 19 people into housing. Actually, that's not true. Most of them into housing, 7 of them went into treatment, but hopefully into housing after there. But what we did in the unique way is that we have a program in our facility, in our agency, that's the mentor program. And Dan, if you could hand out those books for me. We went to, so people who have successfully graduated from our programs, then some of them came into our mentor program. And those were the ones, people, 2 of 4 of them, who we hired to work on the streets because they know people better than we do. And what I met with our mentors a few months ago and said to them, as I was talking to them, I said, I asked them, why you? You know, what is the difference? How do we get people off of the streets? And they, as we talked, and they said they made decisions to do that. But it has to be agencies like Central City Concern or Transition Projects or JOIN who are available for them to have those services. We don't change people's lives. We offer people opportunities to change their own lives. So I said to my the mentors, I asked them, can you please put this in writing for me? And they created this book. I didn't create this book. They put this book together. They literally wrote this book. I found a few typos, but that's okay. But it is, they did an incredible job. And I'm so proud of them. And these are the people who are working on the streets and who are working with each other to help people get off the streets. And I'm proud of the work that we have, the relationship we have with the Business Alliance, with our other programs. But I'm particularly proud of the staff who have gone out on the streets to help each other change. Thank you.
I see one of your volunteers here is a Grand Marshal of the Starlight Parade this year. And named a building after him.
Yeah, and two of the people I know, Bud. You don't know how lucky we are to have Bud on our board, and he's been on our board for about 10 years, and it's just a gift. But I also have to tell you, two of the people that are mentors in that program work for Central City Concern, and they are terrific employees. Just really, it's been a pleasure working with this population, and there are people who are living on the streets who really just really need that support to get off of the streets. We need more housing. We need more resources. We certainly need more housing. We need more mental health support. But it's remarkable what people can do when they have the support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Hales, City Council, glad to be here. Doreen, that was very nice. The partnership with the Clean and Safe Board and TPI and JOIN and Bud Clark Commons and all of the providers downtown is pretty unique. I mean, we get visited by, representatives from different cities and different countries, and they're always very interested to see this relationship and how it actually works to solve problems in the downtown. So I do think we're advanced in that sense. I'm here to talk about the CLEAN program, which in my mind has become a cornerstone of efforts to end homelessness in the city of Portland. We've been doing the CLEAN program as a contract with the Business Improvement District since 2004, and we have hired over 700 formerly homeless people, almost all in recovery from addictions, into the CLEAN program, where many of them start as trainees. It includes 14 regular positions that are represented positions, and they are paid at a livable wage. The trainee positions are just above minimum wage at this point. The good news is we'll be able to give them a raise this year. However, we've graduated in 2013, 53 trainees. 80% of them we were able to place in jobs in the community at a much higher wage level. And so they are also receiving housing from us while they're trainees, and as long as they need it when they're employees. They receive alcohol and drug treatment, mental health, and health care, and especially now with the enrollment of the OHP expansion, they have much more access. So last year, they picked up 29,295 bags of garbage. They've cleaned up 30,782 biohazard sites and 28,385 graffiti tags and stickers have been removed. So it actually works. It's one of the reasons why people comment, I think a major reason why people comment how clean our downtown is compared to other downtowns. But we're also ending homelessness, and people are making remarkable transformations in their lives. So just very happy to have this capacity to help people get off the streets and change their lives.
Thank you. Thanks for the good work.
And I always have to have the last word. So I will tell you, though, to these wonderful visitors that were just here, I had the opportunity with my grandson. I took my grandson on a trip to Japan 6 months ago. And if you haven't been there, it is a wonderful, wonderful place to visit.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Oh, okay, let's call the next one, please.
And 488 is request of Timothy Desper to address council regarding Portland Rescue Mission partnership with Clean and Safe.
And go ahead and call the last one, too, because I think they're
489, request of Roy Carter to address council regarding how Clean and Safe changed his life.
So Mr. Desper's not here, but Mr. Carter is. Welcome. Good morning.
Mayor, staff, thank you for having me.
I prepared a few little notes here to keep it short and simple. They told me I only had 3 minutes, and I have a long story. You guys don't have that kind of time. Okay. Let me get it here. Eating up the clock. First and foremost, I'd like to thank the mayor and his staff for having me.
Mayor and council, but...
Yes. Council, thank you. Also, my thanks go out to Matt Smiley and Jay McIntyre. Without their belief in me as an individual and a future employee, I would be sitting here today talking to you. On August 5th of this year, I'll be off parole for the first time in my adult life. And that's a milestone for me. And I owe it all to the staff and the care and the Central City Concern and their programming. Through their programming, I was able to get into their community volunteer corps program. I was able to get into their employment access program to work on my resume and cover letter. So when I did apply for a job, I wasn't looking like a fool. And that was a big thing for me because 10 years in prison is a long time. And when I got released, all they handed me was a packet and a little book in there with resources and told me to go see my parole officer. I was devastated. 10 years in prison is a long time to be thrown back into the public. So at that time, a gentleman at the estate told me, hey, you need to go over to the Employment Access Center and get into the Community Volunteer Corps program. Well, I asked a couple of the major counselors there at the estate building, which is run by Central City Concern. They took me over there, and I enrolled in the Community Volunteer Corps. And at that time, I was just biting at the bit to do something. I'd been incarcerated for 10 years. Everything was dictated what I do, when I do it, and how I do it. And then they just throw me on the street to go do what you want to do. I was lost. I was literally lost. And by getting to the Community Volunteer Corps, going out and giving back to my community that I took so much from was just a godsend. It gave me pride, self-worth, and it made me be part of something bigger. And after 3 months of doing that program, I finished it in 2 months. And at that opportunity then arose to become a part-time employee at Downtown Clean and Safe, which is a six-month program. After 90 days of working with that program, you're able to get into their job pool and become something else. Well, as I was progressing forward, Jay McIntyre and Matt Smiley saw in me a potential for an employee. And I'm here to tell you today that I'm a full-time employee of Downtown Clean and Safe. I ride a bike around downtown, clean up feces, urine, vomit, broken glass, needles, you name it, I do it, and I'm on a call from 9:30 in the morning till 6 at night. And I'm proud. I'm proud to do what I do. Without Central City Concern, I wouldn't be sitting here. I don't know what I'd be doing if I hadn't got involved in their programming. And those people are no fools. They can see through you. They know if you're really, really wanting to get back and get your life together. And they'll help you. They'll bend over backwards to help you. But on the same token, you have to commit. You know, you have to want to change your life. And that was my goal. You know, most of my adult life on parole, probation, that's no future for nobody, you know. I can't say enough for Central City Concern as a whole. I went to them as an ex-con. Now I'm part of the family. And I believe wholeheartedly that they consider me family. And for that, I'm truly thankful. Thank you guys for your time.
Yeah, Mr. Carter, we hear a lot of testimony in this room, but very seldom this compelling is what you've just said. So thanks for doing this today. I know public speaking maybe isn't your first choice, rather well. So, but I've had the privilege of going out with this man on a part of his shift, and we have a really good ambassador for our city in Roy Carter. And
I've met with quite a few constituents from other states.
Yeah,
I've actually got Employee of the Year from Mrs. Fritz. Yeah. So life's good today, and I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all. I'm housed at Central City Concerns, the state building, which is ran and operated by Central City. I'm self-sufficient. I moved from their second and third and fourth floor small rooms up to fair market housing. I pay rent. I got cable. I got air conditioner. I'm able to watch my favorite sports on weekends. You know, and Jay and Matt, they asked me, whatever they ask me to do, I'll do. I told Jay one day, you can ask me to unload a dump truck full of manure with no gloves on, I'll do it. That's just how, you know, dedicated I am to this company. And I look forward to the future with them.
That's great. Thank Keep you up the good work. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Let's break the rules. Wow. Okay. I think we might be motivated for the long council day we're going to have today. So thank you all. And let's move to item 490. Sorry, consent.
Consent.
We've got time certain, and I did it again. One of these days, you know, see how long it takes me, Commissioner Fritz. I believe we have no requests for removal of items from consent. Is that right? And none from the community as well. Okay, so let's take a roll call on consent as printed.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Approved. Okay. 490, please.
490, approval of the fiscal year 2014-15 budget for the City of Portland.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Scott and Mr. Patton are coming up to walk us through the revisions in the budget based on public testimony, council deliberation, and great staff work. I just want to, as we get started on this item today, thank, first of all, the council for a lot of great discussion and advocacy for a better budget, and I appreciate the improvements that we've made in this budget thanks to some of your particular recommendations and suggestions. I also think we had an extraordinarily valid public process in the budget this year in terms of the quality and engagement of the testimony that we had. I've been remarking on this over and over again. I think it was you, Commissioner Fritz, or someone asked at our hearing at David Douglas how many people have come to this their first public meeting, and about a third of the people in the room raised their hand. And so I think that was really a high water mark for me, just in terms of how we're getting people engaged in community life, that we had that many people coming to a budget session and who got to testify and who were influential in what we ultimately did. So hopefully they feel as validated by that participation as I think we do by what we heard from them. So I think this has been a good process. I appreciate all the good work and want to turn it over to you to walk us through the change memo and the action before us this morning.
Yeah, so what I'll go ahead and do, just explain the run of show, and then you can go ahead and convene as a budget committee, and we'll take it from there. You should all have a packet in front of you with, again, these changes. What the mayor will do shortly is convene council as the budget committee. We will have a hearing on possible uses of state-shared revenue, and there will be testimony for anyone interested in testifying on the uses of those state-shared revenue. We'll then go into the approved budget process. There will be an opportunity during that process. Again, we'll walk through the changes between the proposed and the approved that were filed. There will be an opportunity for any additional amendments. And then at the very end, we will approve the tax levies as well. So with that, Mayor, I'll turn it over to you for the script to convene as the Budget Committee.
Okay. So I'm going to adjourn this meeting of the Portland City Council and reconvene as the Budget Committee of the City of Portland. And I don't think I have the rest of my script, so is there anything else I have to read into the record?
We now go into the state revenue sharing hearing.
Oh, here it is. Sorry. I've got it in front of me. Okay. So now I am opening a hearing to discuss possible uses of state revenue sharing. This hearing is being held by the City Council of Portland in compliance with the provisions of state revenue sharing regulations in ORS 221.770. This is to allow citizens to comment on the possible use of these funds in conjunction with their annual budget process. As proposed for council adoption, the fiscal year 2014-15 budget anticipates receipts totaling $14,535,088 from state revenue sharing. As has been the case in prior years, it is proposed that this revenue be allocated in equal parts to support fire prevention and police patrol services. Is there anyone that wants to speak on this particular item of the state revenue share?
We had two people sign up.
Okay.
Lightning and Crystal Alinsky.
Come on up. And this is not on the budget overall, but on the state revenue sharing in particular.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I represent Think Lightning Company. My name is Lightning. Again, the only issue I have on this, on the state revenue sharing, is that we have police and fire, and I want to stress that, you know, I think we need to have the Portland Housing Bureau involved on this to where it's divided up three ways, because what we're dealing with on the police and fire is we need to fund toward the Portland Housing Bureau to, again, try to end chronic homelessness throughout the city. And that's as important of an issue, in my mind, as the police and fire. It should be a three-way split, you know, divided up three ways on this. And, again, ending chronic homelessness will drop the costs in other areas, especially on the service providers. And again, it needs to be our focus point on trying to end chronic homelessness through Portland, Multnomah County. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Ms. Zielinski here? Okay, so if there's no one else who wishes to testify, then I'll close the public hearing on the possible uses of state revenue sharing. And now we'll take up amendments. Yes?
Not quite.
Sorry. I'm looking at my batting order here, Andrew, so I may not have it right.
Yeah, let me come back in. So, actually, at this point, you need a motion that will consider changes to the proposed budget as are presented in the memo that you all would have received
right.
last Friday. So we need a motion and a second in terms of that, and then I'll walk through those changes.
So we first move the change memo and then take up amendments to
yes,
that.
Yes, correct.
Okay, got it. All right, so I'd like to consider a motion to adopt the proposed budget as presented in the memo, approval of the budget for the city of Portland. Is there a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Is there a second?
Okay. So now I'll just take a brief moment to sort of walk through the major changes in, again, the approved budget memo that you have before you. And there are a number of changes in here that are technical. A lot of bureaus between sort of the proposed and the approved budget, they move money in and out of fund contingencies just for different purposes. There's the budgeting of carryovers that council previously had approved in the spring bump. And then also bureaus update their beginning fund balance in their funds estimates. And so, again, they do a lot of that. But in terms of just the substance, and this is attachment B, and we walk through every change in every bureau, but I will just highlight, I think it's just four or five of those that are sort of policy changes from the proposed budget. One of those is fully funding the tree code implementation, and that shows up in two different places. It shows up on page 4 of the memo under the Bureau of Development Services, and then it shows up towards the end in Portland Parks and Recreation on page 10 of the memo as well in terms of the two different pieces of the tree code implementation. Another thing that I will note is PDC Economic Development Grants for $100,000, they were included as well. That's on page 9. There was new funding for a fire safety chief position of $154,782,000. That's also on page 9. Symphony in the Park for $190,000 was added, as well as a RAC, the Regional Arts and Culture Council's ad package for $250,000. Those things were paid for by a combination of reducing the support for the specific animals that we pay the county by about $56,000, carryover of unspent 13-14 contingencies. So again, this is one-time dollars from the current year that were unspent of about $440,000. And then finally, a reduction in 2014-15 contingency, $100,000 of ongoing and $275,000 of one-time. And again, those are the offsets to pay for the ads that I just talked through. Those are the major policy changes. I'm happy to answer any other questions about anything in Attachment B. But if there are no other questions, then at this point, the mayor, again, would allow for individual amendments to this memo from any commissioners.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Good. Yeah.
And those amendments, again, should note the amount, the bureau, the purpose, and the funding source. Each amendment needs to be moved and seconded in order to be discussed, and then we would generally have a vote on each one. Traditionally, council puts all the amendments on the table and then discusses them and votes on each one, but you could also take them each individually.
I just have one process question. Today we are approving the budget, and then in June we're adopting the budget?
That's correct.
Could you just explain that distinction?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And so today what we do is council approves the budget. After budget approval, it's due to the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission tomorrow, and then they have 21 days to review the budget. They will hold their own public hearing in mid-June, and it will come back for final adoption by council second to last week of June.
Just a further process clarification, after testimony, we could propose other amendments if we're so moved.
Yes, I believe so. I'm going to actually, yeah, I'm getting the nod.
We should move in second amendments up front that we know of.
Right.
Yeah, and again, this is a little bit of a Byzantine process laid out in state law, but what happens here is we get the amendments, and then after having the amendments and each amendment gets voted on, council then needs to vote to actually put the entire package before the public, essentially. And so you will actually take a vote on the approved budget after those amendments prior to testimony. That's not a vote to approve the budget. It's simply a vote to say all of these attachments plus all the any amendments that you want to add are now on the table for testimony. You'll get that testimony, and yes, there could be further amendments at that point.
But we do take that omnibus motion to adopt as amended prior to taking testimony, right?
Yes.
Okay. So can I press you on that? Because my recollection in the past is that with respect to amendments and potentially different budget notes, we first test to see whether there's a second to put it on the table. And you're saying that we'll vote on the merits before we take testimony on it? Because we would normally put the amendments on the table, take testimony, then come back and decide which ones we want to adopt. That's how we would normally do an amendment process.
Yeah. Yeah, in this case, actually, in sort of the way the process is laid out, again, under local budget law, what the budget committee does is, again, you discuss those amendments, you approve those amendments. You're not actually approving, you're approving those amendments to put them on the table, essentially as part of this entire package. So there would be an opportunity, I guess, to come back and either add new amendments or remove those.
Oh, right. But what would be, I'm just speaking out loud here, I'm just trying to have a user-friendly system. What's the harm?
I would love for local budget law to be more user-friendly.
Well, but assuming the mayor has a big hand under Robert's rules, what would be the harm in simply having amendments offered, test whether there are seconds, so that second places the amendment on the table, then take testimony, and then come back and decide which ones we're going to adopt or not?
Yeah, and I'm rapidly approaching the point where I'm going to defer to the city attorney on this. My understanding from a process standpoint, though, is that the entire package needs to be essentially, there needs to be a motion and vote, you know, to approve budget adjustments in attachments B, C, and D and any amendments prior to having that public testimony. It's not formally on the table up until that point.
And then if there's some item in that package that we hear compelling testimony on, what do we do procedurally when we come back today?
And then I think procedurally at that point you would then make any further amendments to the budget, either removing an amendment that was previously made or adding additional amendments.
Okay. So we package it once, take further amendments, if any, and then if none are adopted, the previous vote stands, right? Or do we readopt?
Well, you approve B, C, and D as amended,
right,
and have public testimony, and then actually vote to approve the budget as amended. The first vote is simply to sort of take the entire package and formally put it forward.
It's a beginning of a very long day. I just want to, because
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what this,
I'm trying not to make it any longer.
What this feels like. So technically, we can reconsider our votes after taking public testimony?
Yes. At that point, council would be able to make further changes to the approved budget.
All right. But it's just so the public knows that we're not seeking testimony in the nature of a futility. We're required to put together an omnibus package, but the council can come back based on the testimony and take further action.
Yeah, and my assistant budget director has been hijacked to answer some questions, but I think that the purpose of this is, again, we have a proposed budget that's put forward by an executive. Council acting as the budget committee now, in terms of the approved budget, needs to sort of say, okay, we're formally putting forward these approved budget changes to that, and that's the reason why we go through this preliminary process.
Okay. Our city attorney has his light on.
Just to point out that the council is meeting as the budget committee, and therefore there are slightly different technical procedural requirements that are identified by state law. And yes, the purpose of it is to present a package of a budget to the public, which the public has an opportunity to weigh on. The council has the opportunity, after receiving that testimony, to go back and rejigger, reconfigure, tinker with, and then have a final approval vote on an amended budget after receiving the testimony. So yes, it is kind of a little backwards or a little different from the way you would ordinarily proceed as council, but that's because the procedural rules are slightly different under the state budget law.
That's helpful for me. Thank you.
And as I recall, we can structure this, I believe we have the opportunity to structure this to take substantive amendment proposals and proposals to changes to budget notes in that order, right?
Yes, all amendments, including those to budget notes, should come forward during this amendment process.
Right. I'd rather take substantive changes first and then budget note changes second, just to keep it straight, at least in my head. All right? Okay, so now let me call on the council if there are any proposed additional amendments to the package that is now in front of us.
Thank you, Mayor. I have passed out some budget note amendments.
Okay. We can take them in order. That's fine. We don't have to wait and do budget amendments. I'm sorry. Budget notes second. So, I was going to suggest that we do substantive ones first and budget notes second. But you're
happy
raring to go.
That.
So go ahead.
Okay. On the budget notes, for Portland Parks and Recreation surplus property sales, council removes the requirement for $400,000 in annual parks property sales from revenue projections and directs the City Budget Office to increase the Portland Parks and Recreation current appropriation level by $400,000 starting in 2015-16. The reason for this amendment is because in the during the recession, Parks was told to find $400,000 worth of property per year to sell in order to make ends meet. And not only has that been challenging, but also our goal is not to sell off Parks property, except when it's indicated for other reasons than the budget. So that's the reason for this budget note.
Second.
Okay. And then we discuss and take action on these individually.
Council can either go through each one individually, or you can take all the amendments, and then you will have to have a separate vote on each one, but you can also bring forward all the amendments on the table.
Let's take them all, put them on the table, and come back.
Okay, let's take them all and then return to them in order. Okay.
Has a second now.
Okay, please.
My second budget note is for the Bureau of Development Services for the Inspections and Distressed Properties Program. The Council directs the City Budget Office to increase the Bureau of Development Services' current appropriation level by $286,048 starting in financial year 15-16 in order to provide ongoing funding for housing and nuisance inspection services and the Extremely Distressed Property Enforcement Program.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. This is a program which we've been one-time funding. It was started by Commissioner Leonard, and it involves in particular designated areas, if one tenant complains about problems in an apartment, the entire apartment complex is inspected so that, first of all, the tenant is not targeted, but second of all, if there's a problem in one apartment, there may be a problem in other apartments. We've been one-time funding it up until this year. This year, due to the extremely scarce general fund resources, Bureau of Development Services is dipping into its reserves and actually taking its reserves down below the suggested level in order to fund this program. The level is set at $286,000 by advice of the Budget Office. The current request is $386,000, but historically they haven't been using the full $200,000 for nuisance inspection, for nuisance cleanups. It may be that if this appropriation level isn't enough, that we can I'll be coming back next year, or whoever's in charge of development services will be coming back next year to ask for an additional allocation. But we certainly need this much to keep the program going.
Okay. And that was seconded. Okay.
So my third budget note is for the Portland Parks and Recreation and the Bureau of Development Services for tree code implementation. When the mayor had been thinking of only partially funding the tree code, there was a budget note that said that we would come back and look, see how it's going with lesser funding and ask for more. Since we now have full implementation money, we don't need that budget note. We will, of course, be bringing a report to council during the budget season in 2016 to see how it's going. The tree code implementation will start January of 2015. Sorry, I moved to delete that budget note.
For a second? To delete that budget note?
Second.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have those three on the table. Are there any others? I'm sorry, I have one, which is a budget note change. And let me find the budget note. Sorry. Isn't it? Right. Thank you. Here, no, I found it finally. Okay, so there's a budget note entitled Portland Water Bureau and Office of Management Finance Expand Monthly Statements. I'm very interested in having us energetically explore the question of monthly statements for our city utilities. And that requires a multi-bureau effort of the Office of Management Finance, the Water Bureau, BES, perhaps other bureaus as well, and want to foster that discussion. I think the early version of this this budget note, frankly, that I wrote was a little too directive, and I would rather say we're serious about this. We're going to make sure the conversation and discussion and options are vetted for the council. So my proposal is to delete the following language. The Portland Water Bureau is directed to expand monthly statements to all retail customers for water, sewer, and stormwater services by January 1, 2015. Any costs associated with expanding the monthly statements shall be absorbed within current Bureau resources and shall not result in any rate increase. Second paragraph, In addition, the Office of Management and Finance is directed to report on options for consolidating the statements of all city services. The report shall identify relevant bureaus, services, and statements, potential costs, and an implementation timeline. So my proposal is to delete the first paragraph and keep the second paragraph, which maintains the Office of Management and Finance's lead responsibility to convene those bureaus and to vet the options for us. So that's my motion.
Second.
Second.
Okay, so that one's on the table as well. Any others?
Budget notes or substantive amendments?
Either one.
I'd submit an amendment. This amendment changes the funding source for 5.0 officers and 1.0 sergeant in the Police Bureau Drugs and Vice Division, 1.0 captain from the Records Division, and 1.0 lieutenant from the Personnel Division. The funding source changes from general fund ongoing to one-time funds. All positions will be converted from regular full-time to limited-term full-time positions. The Portland Police Bureau's general fund current appropriation level for FY 2015-16 is reduced by $783,456.
Okay. Second that for the purpose of discussion.
Okay. Seconded. All right. Any more? All right. Then we should take.
So I have five amendments.
Take action
total.
On those five amendments in order. So let's take up first the Commissioner Fritz's motion on surplus property sales. Further council discussion.
Mayor, on each of these, I would benefit from council discussion, in particular, knowing if these have the support of either the mayor or the budget office. Since some of these I've not seen before, so before we take it to a vote, I could use some guidance as to the council view on these.
Well, I'll give the budget office a chance to speak, and then I will too.
Well, as a non-voting member of council.
As a trusted resource for the council.
As the independent budget office.
Yeah, is there a specific question on these?
So,
or just
so
generic?
You've reviewed all the budgets and budget notes.
Specifically on this first one, the surplus property sales, again, as Commissioner Frist noted, a couple of years ago, Parks, in lieu of an additional budget cut, essentially included in their budget that they would sell $400,000 of property every year. Again, for 5 years, what this budget note does is it goes ahead and it deletes that. It adds $400,000 to their current appropriation level target starting in 2015-16. Essentially, this property sale was done in lieu of additional budget cuts. So I think one way to look at this, it is an add back for Parks for budget cuts that were taken again in the current year. From a process standpoint, in terms of adding CAL targets in 2015-16, that has been done by councils in the past, and I think it will be done by councils in the future. It does essentially say that the first dollars that are available, or actually whether dollars are available or not, $400,000 will be added to Parks CAL targets. So if our forecast is exactly on, this would drive $400,000 of cuts in 2015-16. If we end up with, say, $400,000 of additional resources, it says that those additional resources will first go to Parks rather than any other ad packages that may come forward in 15-16. This is similar to what Council did with the Housing Bureau, Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and PDC Economic Development a couple of years ago to essentially move those funds from one-time into ongoing. And again, that drove some of the $21 million of reductions we took in 12-13.
So, Commissioner Fish, I appreciated your question. And the reason I asked Andrew to speak first is that we do have an independent budget office, and he's always free to disagree with me in public as well as in private. So that's why I wanted to make sure to reinforce that principle of how we operate. In this case, I do think this is an appropriate amendment. As Andrew said, the budget office is wary, and they need to always be wary. And I'm wary as mayor, as the developer of the proposed budget, in pre-committing funds for future budget years. But there are situations where I think that's appropriate. In this case, council may be at a moment of being up against it, specified that we would rely on surplus property sales and parks in order to keep the store together. Maybe that was a good idea for the short run, but it's not sustainable for the long run. And I don't think we should stay in a place where we're, in effect, have a gun to the head of the Parks Bureau saying, sell some property so you can keep your staff. And that was, again, maybe necessary in the short run, but it isn't a good practice in the long run. So in this case, I'm certainly willing to, in effect, pre-commit future budget resource to parks in order to get them out of this particular situation.
By the way, I appreciate the opportunity for the public to see Andrew Scott in the budget office disagree with us in public. He does, Lord knows he does it enough in private, so we get to now pull back the curtain. But it is a function of an independent budget office that he gives his best advice and gives us a historical context, and we're the ultimate decision maker. So thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Then let's take a roll call on including that amendment in the revised budget.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much.
Aye. Approved. Okay, then let's take up the inspector positions as well. So this is also increasing the Cal target in the future, but these are positions, I don't know if you completely explained this, that are being funded in the short term by reserves, but that ultimately need to be funded otherwise.
Yeah, these are long-term one-time funded positions that we've sort of every year figured out, you know, a way to do it. So this is very similar, again, to the prior budget notes on other bureaus that essentially says we're going to move this to ongoing in the future. I think the same concerns as I raised with parks are on the table, but again, to the extent council wants to fund these on an ongoing basis, this is a mechanism for doing so.
I used to call them serial one time. Have we now rebranded them?
No, serial one time works fine. Yeah.
Other discussion? Okay, then let's take a roll call on this one, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to the Community Alliance of Tenants who year after year after year have come in to advocate for this program and to my colleagues for supporting it ongoing. Aye.
Hales.
I'm going to support this for several reasons. One, this is a program that is so critical. I was out at East Precinct recently for a roll call, and our police officers at East Precinct were talking about the 200 problem houses they were dealing with and how essential this program is for public safety. Not a new idea, but just to have them personally reinforce that, to me, increased the importance of this program. And although we haven't fully gotten there, but with the budget office's help and with the council's discipline, we are trying to get out of the business of serial one-time expenditures, and we're almost there. So I hope that by, you know, the next budget or the budget after, we have, in effect, cleaned up that problem for the duration, and that things that we're going to do year after year after year after year are in the base budget, and that things that we're doing on an occasional basis are one-time expenditures, which is what I think people would have a right to expect. You know, perhaps for understandable reasons, in bad budget years, some of that got fuzzed up, but we're trying to make that clear and simple and also give people the reassurance that these programs are going to be around, and obviously give the people that work in these programs the assurance that their jobs are going to be around. Aye. Okay, next item, deleting the budget note on the tree code. Further discussion?
You're the author of the budget note, Mayor. Do you consider this a friendly amendment?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further discussion or any questions for staff? Then roll call on that deletion.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to all the citizens and the Urban Forestry Commissioners who came in to testify on the tree code. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, now we're to the change in the budget note with respect to monthly billing, where we are simply keeping the statement that we're going to ask OMF to lead the effort and report to us with options, potential costs, and implementation. Any further discussion on that?
Is there a date by which?
I did not set a date in the in the second paragraph of the budget note, but I think I have Fred Miller's assurance that this is going to get priority treatment, so I don't feel a need to set a date in the budget note. It frankly falls to me to make sure that my bureau, OMF, gets the work done timely and gets it to us so far in advance that anything that has to be done by next fiscal year, we have the chance to do it.
If I could add just one comment to that, Mayor. Because the Water Bureau has already rolled out monthly billing, anyone within our listening audience can go online and sign up for monthly billing with the condition that you have to agree to receive a bill electronically and pay electronically, which is a barrier for some of our customers. So one of the options we'll be looking at is how to have a not just a paperless system and operate within a prudent cost structure. But it would be my expectation in January, February, for us to have a work session to evaluate options that are developed. So I don't think that needs to be in the budget note, but it underscores a sense of urgency we have to come forward with some recommendations.
Yeah, I agree with that. And obviously, you and I, Commissioner Fish, are going to need to be working in concert on this because it's primarily your bureaus that have to figure out how to bill people this way with revenue support. So, Other discussion? Okay, then a roll call on that amendment, please.
Fish.
Aye.